Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what I promise will be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Absolutely thrilled you've joined us tonight. Happy Sunday. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and across the way is George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Bill, how are you?
Good. George, when did people stop asking you to go to lunch? Do you know specifically
actually,
when?
Actually, they never did.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Yep.
George, again, we've got another award-winning show queued up tonight, because we have Dr. Glenn Pickering with us tonight as one of our most favorite guests. Tonight, he is going to talk about, the title is Recovery, : The Three Real Questions.
One of our most favorite guests. You can stay, Glenn. You're my favorite.
Well, you know what I'm trying to say. We say that about every guest that comes in the studio.
Oh, man. Here, I thought I was special.
You are. I always learn something.
Thanks for helping me dig. Help me dig out of this hole right now, would you, George?
No, I'm just going to let you squirm for it. What I like about having Dr. Pickering on, or Glenn, is that I always learn something, and it helps my recovery.
I learn something during the show, and I learn something in the following days because I go back and I listen to it. And if you want to send this program off to your friends, and you're going to probably want to for sure as one of our favorite guests, you can go online to myfaithradio.com, go to the Real Recovery show page, and you can click on the link and send it off because that is a good way to spread the message. George, we're going to talk about step 12 tonight, then we're going to get Glenn on right away.
Absolutely. One of the things I heard is we're on Saturdays, too.
Yes, starting this last Saturday, we'll be replayed from 3 to 4 o'clock.
Because I know you listened to it.
I did listen to it yesterday.
And you called me.
I just wanted to verify it.
And I said, call me after the game's over, because I was watching the game. I didn't know it was on.
Did you listen?
I will next week. I know it's a good show. I want to get to Dr. Pickering. We're on step 12.
You mean one of our very favorite guests, Dr. Pickering?
One of our most favorites.
One of our most favorites.
Yeah, favoritist.
Okay.
Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we carried this message to other addicts and tried to practice these principles in all our affairs. The big thing here is we have a program. It's not about the program saving us or getting us to stop. It's about how we access God, Bill. And this is a systematic way of doing it every day. I can get myself out of the way. I can confess what I need to confess, repent, and make some reparation work, and then keep taking inventory, how am I doing, and work with others. So this encompasses our whole life. If you say you're saved, great, but act like it, and that's what we need to do. If my outward life, it should reflect what's happened on the inside. There should be a change. I think Chuck Swindoll says, faith without works is dead, and the way you see that visually is imagine you're like we are in Minnesota, and you're out in the country, and there's a house ahead. Well, you can't see the fire in the fireplace, but you can see the smoke coming out of the chimney. And that's the way our lives should be. If we are saved and we're changed, we should see it in our service and care for others.
I agree.
That's beautiful.
It is nice, George.
Thank you.
And
stole it.
Really?
From Chuck Swindoll.
Oh, there you go.
Who's also on 900 AM.
Who, if he was on the show, would be one of our most favorite guests.
No, he would be our favorite.
No, would he?
I'd be number two now.
And if Keller was on, Swindoll would be two, and he'd Keller would be one. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just saying you're talking about change in step 12, and the gospel of Jesus Christ changes everything. And like Glenn would say, you can start having a new life right now. There you go. How about that?
Now is right.
Because you are worthy of love and belonging, and you're worthy of intimacy, and if you are suffering right now from an addiction and you have separation from loved ones and a loss of intimacy, change is possible. And tonight you've come to the right program because we are going to talk about recovery, the three real questions. Ta-da.
All right.
I like that.
Yeah.
Let's get to them.
Let's not waste time, George. I mean, because we obviously don't want to waste time. Right, Alex?
Exactly.
Yeah. See, there you go.
Great job.
The voice of reason. So, Glenn, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you.
So, okay, we're dying to know what the three real questions are, starting with number one.
Well, thank you. That's a great lead-in. Yes. I'd like to say to begin with that I've spent the last almost 30 years now doing counseling, much of it with people who are working on overcoming an addiction of some sort or another, often sexual addiction. And so I have talked to thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are really, really serious about recovery and about the 12-step program. And so I've come to understand that there are three questions, really, that each of them needs to wrestle with and come to terms with as a part of their recovery. In fact, it actually undergirds all of their recovery. And question number one, which sounds goofy and simple almost, but I ask all of my addictive people at some point in the process this question: what do you actually want? Now, for example, if I'm talking to one of my sexual addictive clients, they might look at me kind of funny and say, well, of course, it's about sex. And I think, no, I can almost guarantee you that that's not true. What were you actually trying to achieve in that acting out, the pornography, the prostitution, whatever? And if they're giving it some prayerful thought and not just sort of blowing off the question, then eventually they're going to tell me it has something to do with intimacy or closeness or connectedness or relationship. And they're just trying to find some way to be connected to another person. Now, and so it always becomes clear to me, how can I say, that what they want is right and good. It's just that their way of trying to get it is distorted.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tend to carry around shame as if what they want is bad. And I think, no, 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 what you want is right and good and sacred, probably, just that your way of going about it is so unhelpful. Or if I'm talking to a person who struggles with an alcohol addiction, and I say, well, when you really think I really crave a drink, what do you actually mean? And they'll look at me the same way, like I've lost my mind. Well, I want to drink, of course. And I think, no, really, what are you actually wanting? And they're going to tell me friendship or a social experience or calmness or an ability to check out of the struggle that they're in at the moment or something that really doesn't actually have anything to do with the alcohol. The alcohol is just a way to get whatever it is that they actually want. Same thing if you talk to somebody who has an eating addiction, and you say, well, what is it you want when you're eating? And of course, right away, they'll say, well, food. But then if you say, no, 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 what are you actually trying to get? They're going to tell you comfort. They're going to tell you they feel like being filled up instead of empty. They're going to tell you something that has something to do with them that's really important, that really, really matters. And it's just that they have a distorted way of trying to get this thing that really matters. George, you look like you had something to say.
Oh, I was just thinking, this sounds a lot like my favorite addiction counselor that I've ever worked with says that you need to get out of your recovery what you were trying to get out of your using.
Exactly, except in a better way. And so then my question is, yeah, George, you really are very bright. Okay, so
that was the chief chef.
No, it's nice. I like it. I thought it was terrific what you said. And I think it's so true because, how can I say, it's so easy to think about what you don't want. And I just think, you know, you guys have heard me say before that the opposite of an addiction is not really sobriety. The opposite of an addiction is intimacy, to be connected to other people, because all of us, everybody who struggles with an addiction is struggling with a real pervasive sense of loneliness. And so if all I think is, okay, my goal is to stop doing X, well, see, all that leaves is that empty spot in my life where X used to be.
Right.
This is not actually long-term helpful to me. It's an important first step. But then I have to ask myself, what am I going to fill that up with that actually will fill me up? And so if what I really want is intimacy and connectedness and closeness, for example, if I'm a recovering sex addict, I need to start wondering and looking and thinking carefully about how can I start getting closer to people? How can I work on my relationship skills, my communication skills? How do I deal with conflict in ways that will help people be close to me instead of driving people away? If I go to the bar because, not so much because I have to have the alcohol, because that's where I find friends or that's where I relax, that's okay. Then it's one thing to say, okay, you got to stop drinking, but see, that's still going to leave that hole in your life that has to do with fun and social and relaxing and calm. And so it's going to be really important to say, okay, maybe we're going to have to work on your prayer life. Maybe we're going to have to work on exercise. We might have to work on meditation. We might have to start reading more. I mean, what helps you? You might even need to be on medication if you're actually that anxious. The question is, what will help you actually get that thing, except in a way that's actually helpful to you? Because the thing you want is probably a fine and a right and a good thing to want.
So just the avoidance is abstinence. It's
right.
Not recovery.
No, it is not. In fact, it is like, well, here's how I always think about it. So we have this little garden in our backyard, and in the spring, if we go out there, it'll be all lumpy and brown and covered with weeds. Okay, so we take out a rototiller, right, and you rototill it so you have a nice square piece of black dirt. That is sobriety. Gotten rid of the weeds and the junk in your life, so now you could do something with it. But you haven't yet.
Okay.
All you've done is clear out a spot where you could. Now you could develop real friends or start exercising or develop your prayer life or start reading or connecting to people or joining a church or doing something or being in a 12-step group. You could do something now with that square piece of black dirt. You could grow something really great. But the dirt by itself is not actually the goal. It's a step to the goal.
I like that, Bill. We've gotten rid of the problem, but we haven't grown towards the solution.
Right. And here's what I know. See, I can have a vision of what I don't want. Let's say, for example, there's a guy who says, Glenn, I'm really a bad communicator. I always interrupt my wife when she's talking. So from now on, whenever she's talking, I'm going to think, don't interrupt. So the whole time she's talking, he's thinking, don't interrupt, don't interrupt, don't interrupt. What's the only picture he has in his mind?
Don't interrupt.
He's not even listening, is he? Interrupt. That's the only thing he has a picture in his mind about. Interrupt. Don't do this. Don't do this thing I'm focused on and thinking about. Well, of course, pretty soon he's going to do exactly that thing because that's what he's actually thinking about. When it says in Proverbs that without a vision, the people shall perish, they're talking about the congregation. But it's just as true as about us individually that we need to have a clear picture of what we do want. So if that guy comes to me and says, Glenn, I want to be a better communicator, so from now on I'm not going to interrupt, I think, no. If you had a really clear picture of you listening to your wife really, really carefully, what would that picture look like? And he's going to say something like, well, I'd look at her, I'd make eye contact, I would nod, I'd summarize what she said when she got done. Right. Now that's the picture of what you actually do want, not just a picture of what you don't want. And the problem with sobriety, well, not the problem, but the limit of it is it's only a process of getting rid of what I don't want, but it really only gets me halfway to the goal. The other half of that question is, yeah, but what is it you actually do want? Because if I don't find a way to get the things I actually do want, guess what? And I just start backsliding because I still haven't found a different way to get that thing that I think I want.
Okay, for me, abstinence is an avoidance response. It's stopping a behavior.
Exactly.
But sobriety, in my terminology, would be abstinence with some changes. So
exactly.
Is that fair?
I think it's perfect because it's talk about what you think those changes would look like for a person who's serious about recovery.
Well, for a lot of us, Doctor, what happens is we come into recovery out of an avoidance of pain.
Right,
But I'm a free market guy, so I believe that we stay in recovery out of a pursuit of pleasure. Okay. In that we'll forget how bad it was in our clients, Bill, will, once they're off paper, once the consequences are gone, that thought comes in, I can use again or whatever my behavior was. But if we are getting positive reinforcements and a return of our investment for the new behaviors, we don't want to throw away what we have in recovery to use. But if we don't have anything, boy, we do it, don't we?
Right. Because there's nothing to lose.
All right, we're off to the races. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the more real questions with one of our most favorite guests, Dr. Glenn Pickering. We'll be back in just a minute. Real Recovery. Thanks for staying with us tonight. As his arm had reached to love, oh, and she looked at the window. See, that wasn't long. We weren't gone very long, were we, George? We're back.
We're back.
Recovery is back on the air. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex W. on the board. We have Dr. Glenn Pickering in studio tonight. And, George, we're coming at tonight's show with both tone and tenacity. Not entirely sure what tenacity means, but, hey, I'm using words because I like the way it sounds. And we're talking about what Dr. Glenn Pickering is talking to us tonight about is recovery, colon, the three real questions. And the first question is, what do you want? What do you want?
The other two questions.
No, but I know. But see, I try to get a little momentum going, and you've got to show up with this.
You had tenacity going.
I had a little bit of tenacity going, show up with this.
Well, I like that, because what he's talking about.
So annoying.
I work at it. It's a lifestyle choice. What I like about it, Glenn, is that we're really looking at what do we want, and that's not to stop the behavior.
Right.
That behavior gave us something.
Right, exactly. And it gave us something in a distorted form. So the question is, how can we get it in a way that's not distorted? And if you look at the 12 steps, for example, they're really just a way of saying, how can you get all the things you want in the purest possible form?
That was the rightest
possible form.
Bill, that was good.
No, I agree.
So, whereas every addiction is just about getting our needs met in a way that's really, like, distorted. And I don't mean distorted in, like, some judgmental way. I just mean, like, if you take a piece of steel and twist it, you don't have to twist it very much for that girder or that steel beam to not work right. And I just think we get off track on how we go about trying to get the things that we actually want. And we need to sort of come back on track about ways to get the things we want in ways that are actually like good for us and good for the people in our lives.
Would it be a bad idea for me to sit down after listening to this and go, what do I want? Should I write down what I want?
Right. Well, I'm just wondering if some of these thoughts are thoughts that have never been investigated by someone.
Right.
I've never really thought what I want.
Right, exactly.
So I have to investigate what it is you're asking me to do to come up with an answer, and that might be scary too.
It can be, and I think the reason why when I ask my clients these last 30 years who are in recovery about, you know, what do you want, and they look at me weird at first, it's because everything in their life at this point is geared towards avoiding what they don't want. And even the drug usage was really a way of escaping what they don't want. My life is filled with pain or unhappiness or shame, so I use this acting out to get so that I don't have to deal with that stuff. And so then I come into recovery, and people say, okay, well, you've been acting out, so you want to find ways to say that you know you don't do that. But see, still the whole emphasis is on what you don't want. And so oftentimes you're right. When I do ask my guys, well, what is it you actually do want? They look sort of puzzled, and they think it's kind of a trick question. But it's a really important question. What is it you actually want?
Well, if I'm going to put my addict's hat on, if I could
use
that term,
yes.
The best way for me to come up with what I want is to think that I can go out and use again without any consequence. Now, obviously, this is just a thought, but what will I get from that? What am I excited looking forward to?
When you think it sounds so good to drink, sounds so good to act out, sounds so good to do it, what about it sounds good?
That's fair then.
Right. To ask myself that question, what about it exactly sounds good? Because I promise you there are 100 better ways to get that.
But I need to know what I really want before
exactly,
I go.
Exactly, which is why I have to ask myself that question, just real honestly. Why is it that this sounds fun to me? Why is it that this sounds good to me? Why do I feel so intensely like I want to go do that thing?
Okay.
Because there is a reason.
Yes.
And probably several.
Well, we talked a little bit before we went on air about celebrating. It's always been hard as a recovering person and people we work with in recovery. How do you celebrate sober?
Right.
Uh-huh. Oh, we go out and get a piece of pie. That never cut it. Well, it did for a while, actually.
Uh-huh. I've seen you with chocolates.
Well, yeah, there were two pieces of pie or three. But that's where we want to focus, isn't
right.
it?
Yes.
How do I get that? And
right.
Does that lead us into question two? Or
it sure could, in fact. So let's do that if you want.
Okay.
So if the question number one is, what is it you really want? The question number two is, and who will be in your community as you go about getting that?
Would you repeat that?
Yes. And who will be in your community as you go about getting that? And here's what I mean. So many addictive people, especially my sex addict clients, they'll come to me and say, Glenn, I've tried to give up, and I've tried to give up. I tried to quit so many times, and finally I had to admit I had to come and see you. Like, this is an admission of weakness or defeat in some way. But see, let's go back to what I said before, that every addiction is driven by a profound sense of loneliness and isolation. So here's what they're actually saying to me. Glenn, I tried to defeat my loneliness by myself, but I couldn't do it.
I think So where does that lead us?
Right. More loneliness. So then the question is, okay, if you're really serious about recovery and you really believe that the opposite of an addiction is not sobriety or abstinence, as George more helpfully says, but intimacy, then the question is, okay, who is going to be on my team as I move towards getting those things that I want? Because there are many, many people who want to be on your team. The 12 steps make it clear how much God also wants to be on your team. And it's like there's this whole group of people who want to help you get what you actually want, if they knew what that was. When Jesus says in Matthew 7, ask and it shall be given unto you, knock and the door shall be opened unto you, he's trying to say, hey, once you have a clear picture of what you want, bring it to God in prayer, tell all the people in your life that that's what you want, and just notice that those things start showing up in your life. But it only happens in community.
Gosh, you know, I think that part in James, guys, jumps out, too. You don't have because you don't ask.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's perfect. Right.
So now I'm looking for that. Who do I want in my life? I think we're a lot better at who don't we want in
right,
our
exactly.
life.
Right, exactly. And just like it's fine to say what behavior you want to quit doing, that's an okay start, but still the question is, yeah, but in the long run, what is it you actually do want? It's probably, it is true that there are a few people who can't be in your life, but the real question is, yeah, but who are all the people who are trying to be in your life who really could be of help to you? And going to a 12-step meeting is a great thing. Going to church is a great thing. Joining a men's group is, I mean, I don't care if you're on the volleyball team. You know what I mean? It's like there are lots and lots of people who are trying to be on your team in all kinds of different ways. if you're willing to break out of that sort of shame-based isolation that comes with any addiction and really let all the people keep trying to be on your team actually be on your team.
That's a big one. Let me throw out a verse in Hebrews, which I was thinking about, which probably fits into step question two. It says in chapter 4, verse 16, "Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence,
right,
so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need."
Right. Right. I just think, well, I wrote in one of my books, I forget which one, about a silly little story about how one night I noticed that we didn't have any milk in the refrigerator, and our family back then generally had milk and cereal for breakfast in the morning. So I thought to myself, you know what? I'm not going to ask anybody else to take care of it or anything. I'm just going to take care of that myself. I'm just going to go get milk. So I get in my car, I drive to the store, I buy some milk, and I'm driving home thinking, I'm glad I just took care of that myself. And then God convicted me in the way God can, that you just sort of see your behavior suddenly from a whole different angle. I just started laughing like a hyena in my car. Here's Glenn getting milk by himself. I get in my car, that what, 300, 400 people has something to do with building?
Mm.
I drive down my driveway that somebody else put in. I get on the road that every single taxpayer in my town contributed money towards. I pull into the store that hundreds and hundreds of people helped to build. I buy this carton of milk that a cow gave, that a farmer milked, that a cow trucked into the store, so that the clerk that can take my money and trade that for milk, and so I can drive home, so that I did that all by myself.
Point well taken.
You're not going to raise my taxes now, are you?
No. Okay. See, I just think we can't do the silliest little thing by ourselves. So to even think, okay, here's this big recovery thing, but I want to do that myself. I just think, oh, that's such bad thinking. The question really has to be, who are all the people who need to be on my team if I'm really going to start creating the life where I actually do the things I really want?
I like that a lot.
Great. What do you like about it?
Well, we don't do anything by ourselves, but we tend to isolate.
Yes.
And take credit for the good stuff, because all the talent we have is from God. But then when we're really bad, that we own too,
right,
and nobody can change that. And in Minnesota, you forgot the guy that plows your driveway. So that's
right. See, there you go. And the street.
And the street.
Right.
So how do we get into action on that? We can change it any time we want. I'm listening tonight. I agree with this. I'm coming.
I'd like each of you to think about, okay, if you were both going to be even more open to being in community than you are right now, what would you say yes to that you keep saying no to so far?
And that's really a good question.
Well, I think that golf trip that I wasn't going to take to Arizona in 2 weeks for a month, I'll go.
Because why not?
Yeah, why not, huh?
Because I can probably help some people.
Yeah.
How about you, Bill?
I can't think of something right now.
Well, here's what I push you to think harder about, and I get it's hard sometimes on the spot, but sometimes people say, well, Glenn, where am I going to find the people who can be on my team? And here's what's funny. Those people are all in your life already. They keep asking if you want to do stuff. They keep inviting you to things. They keep asking you how you're doing. They keep bumping into you. And they keep telling you that they would be on your team if you would just let them.
So we become our own obstacle, our own biggest obstacle.
Yes, in so many ways. And I think to myself all the time, we have to pay attention to a knee-jerk answer. So just like the knee-jerk answer to the first question about what you want is about what you don't want. The knee-jerk answer when people ask you to do something that you don't usually do is no. And then after you come up with that knee-jerk answer, then in your mind you start making up a reason. But I just want you to know.
Why are you looking at me?
You actually say no before you come up with a reason. The no is actually just literally a thoughtless, non-thinking response, because it's not you what you usually do. It's a little different. It's outside your comfort zone. It's a person you don't maybe spend as much time with as other people. And so you say no as a knee-jerk response.
I think I have that in one of the books I wrote.
Yeah?
You just drop the anchor, and then you figure out what your reason's going to be for why you're not going to do it.
Right.
Well, that keeps you from getting into a lot of stuff you don't want to do.
Of course it does.
I think it goes back for a lot of us in recovery to protect our using time.
Mm-hmm.
If it's right. Friday or Saturday night, mm-hmm. and I get invited to something with people that don't drink, that's the worst thing that can happen.
Right, right, because every addicted person, to a certain degree, lives a life that I call the life of a secret agent. And if I'm actually going to live in community, that requires transparency, requires accountability, well, those are not part of the life of a secret agent. So,
Could you be a double agent there, Glenn? Or?
Yes, in fact, you can. You can be a you can be a triple agent if you darn well feel like it.
So trying to do something, when somebody asks you to do something this week, the alternative would be go, yeah, I'll do it.
Right. Or if you look in the bulletin of church and there's something that sounds fun, instead of just thinking, oh, that seems fun, and then not actually doing anything about it, actually take that step of looking into it, of volunteering, or talking to somebody about it to see if maybe that's something you want to do.
Doggone it, you had me there for a while.
Right.
Something in the church bulletin that I'd like to volunteer and do.
Or go to.
I don't know.
We could work on that.
We should think about that, George. We're going to take a little short break. When we come back, we've got lots more tonight. Thanks for being with us on Real Recovery. You're listening to My Faith Radio. We'll be back in just a sec.
Life is dull.
The boss.
That's the boss. Yeah, the chairman. Chairman saying life is dull. I don't think the life was ever dull for him.
Well, ours would be to him.
Ours would be very boring to
him. I think
him.
We need a new weather girl. I didn't like that forecast, Bill. I'm sorry.
Frank had a lot of community, and we were just talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering. We're talking about recovery, colon, the three real questions. And the first question was, what do you want? And the second one was, who are you going to do it with? Who is going to be in that community?
Right. Right. And if you think about it, every 12-step group, I think this all the time to myself, every 12-step group has one thing in common. It's a group. I want you to just think about that for a second. So I go to this group of people, and I tell my real story while they listen. They tell their real story to me while I listen, and I actually start to form real relationships with real people. And I go from that place where I'm isolated and disconnected to a place where I live in community. So what I'm saying is totally consistent, I promise you, with the 12 steps. The 12 step has to be one of those communities. This is the place where you are your real self. And it's also important not to have that be your only community. There has to be at least one or two other ones in your life where you also feel connected to people, because you're more than just your addiction.
What about when people have burned all bridges with all people? Because I talked to a lot of guys who are in this situation,
right,
and they've got a very fragmented community of people,
right,
that they're not really in contact with, and
right,
vice versa, and they don't super care about each other. I mean, it sounds like what we're describing here is a very loving, nurturing community, which
right,
a lot of addicts don't have.
Right. I think, and partly they don't have because they've kept themselves isolated, and partly they don't have it because they don't get that they have it. A lot of times people come to me and say, Glenn, when I was acting out, I burned so many bridges, I can't go back to any of those people. And here's what I find over and over and over again. Those will always, in the end, prove to be some of the most absolute supportive people in that recovering person's life. Think about if you have somebody in your life who is addictive and was hurtful to you because of their acting out, who comes back to you sincerely and says, I'm in a 12-step group. I really see how I screwed up. I'm working like crazy to get my life together. I'm so sorry that I was hurtful to you.
Mm.
I would really like to find a way to be in a different relationship with you.
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it is powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just think, even if I think I've wrecked every relationship I've had, I promise you that that's not true.
It sounds like it's a swallowed pride, though.
Well,
and
it is.
There's no defiance there, and
right,
I don't think
right,
addicts are lean that direction.
Right, which is
what are
I,
you talking about, Arnold?
Yeah, that's
you
darn right.
Do you want me to come over there?
Yeah, whatever.
But I just think, but if you just think of the 12
bring
steps.
Bring an army.
That, if you just think about the 12 steps like I just said, I mean, that is that 12 steps. So, hey, I get that I wasn't in control of myself. I get that I have some serious flaws. I get that I've hurt other people, and I need to acknowledge that I have and ask for their forgiveness. I mean, it really is about relationship resolution. So what happens in the group is supposed to be about building real relationships with real people. And what happens outside of the group, if I live that out, will result in a whole lot of reconciliation.
I think one of the things within a lot of those groups, too, when you open yourself and you're vulnerable, people don't attack you and kick you because you're down. And my experience in Christian community hasn't always been that way.
Right.
You know, it has sometimes, but and there's a risk there. But gosh, guys, I can't remember somebody ever coming to me in that where you don't want to help them.
Right.
And I
right,
think that's, you know, to be wanted, and that's a big deal. But I think it's easier to be that way, as you say. You know, we need different sets of friends, I
mm-hmm,
guess.
Right.
It's easier to be that way in an open recovery environment. I know when I go to church, how you doing? I'm doing great. well, that's not why I'm there, but that's the reflective deal because mm-hmm. that's kind of the expected behavior, right. isn't it?
There are churches, it seems to me, where the goal is to act like you don't have any problems. But I just think that's not church. I just think, well, let me tell you this quick story. I had a great aunt who went out to lunch with me years ago, and in the middle of lunch, she said, Glenn, I like you so much better now. I started kind of laughing awkwardly just like that. And she said, no, I don't mean anything bad by it. She said, I've always really looked up to you. I've always admired you. But I've always sort of seen you as this sort of stainless steel ball, no seams, perfect. I could never find a way in. And she said, now you're so much more likely to ask me questions and talk about your struggles and get my insight on things and tell me what's working for you and what's not. She said, it's so much easier for me to find a way in. And I really, really get, she was teaching me this powerfully important thing. We connect in the level of our struggles. And so if I'm going to be in community, and it's a real community, that means it's a place where we share our actual struggles. And if I'm in a group of people, that's not a community, where the whole point is just to act like we have it all together, that's not a community. It might be a group of people who interact with each other on occasion. It is not a community. Community means a place where I get to share my struggles, as do you, and we bond on that level of connecting at the level of our struggles, because that is where we connect.
Well, that'd be nice to find.
What's that?
I have a little bit of that, but that would be really nice to find church-wise for me.
Right, right. And partly, just like you might be surprised at how many people would be open to being in a reconciled relationship if you go to them, you might be surprised at how many groups that you're in would actually want to become more of that if you'd be willing to be a little more open about your struggles. And I don't mean that you specifically. I just mean all of us is true, but specifically, George, because you were saying that. Gwen, my wife, who is she goes to a gym. They have what's called team fitness, and it's a group of people who go, you know, work with a fitness person together. And it was real flat, and nobody interacted with each other. So Gwen started high-fiving people, congratulating people. She does what she calls, I put the team in team fitness. And now that whole group sort of applauds for each other, they're excited for each other, they high-five each other when somebody does something good. I just think so often, see, we want to be connected. If someone can just give us that shot, most times we will take it. So even the groups you're in, George, where you feel like, yeah, I don't know, people are really open here, you might be shocked at just how much, if you start sharing a little bit of your struggles, that the people are willing to sort of meet you in that same place, because we so badly want to connect to each other.
Gwen gave them permission, didn't she?
That she gave them permission to do what they actually wanted.
They wanted to do that.
Right, see, they were in team fitness. Why?
So they could have some team support.
Right, exactly. And so all she was doing is giving them a chance to do what they actually wanted. So we're back to question number one, what do you actually want? And they're in team fitness because they want to get in shape in the context of a community. Okay, so Gwen is just helping them get what they want.
Mm-hmm. After the show, we do team dinner. We go to dinner and George buys.
All right.
I've only been buying 3 years in a row now, you know, so that might change one of these nights.
I doubt it.
Yeah. Well,
and can we come back to the question about fun just for a minute?
Please.
George, you're saying, hey, what if,
no,
you know,
we were doing so well on our own. Let's just keep going down this path. Yeah, let's
right.
go back to fun.
So you're thinking, well, you know, so afterwards we can go out to pie. But that's not very exciting. And it reminded me of, I talked to a woman who was married to a very sexually addictive guy who was just coming into recovery. And she said, Glenn, he always wants me to do these wild, crazy sex acts. And she said, but I actually started to get really turned up, not because I don't like sex, but because it started to feel more and more as about the act, not about me. Well, see, if I realize that sort of going out with supper with somebody is not about the pie, it's about actually being in that connection with that person. And then I start to find out, wow, that's actually really fun. So I need to focus on the person and not the activity. Yes?
That's great. That's really great. So question one is, what do you want? Question two, who are you going to have in community?
Right.
And I think it's time for question three.
All right. Question three is...
Time for three.
All right. And once you've figured out what you want and you have a community that's helping you get that, then the question is, and who are you going to give that back to?
Mm.
And that ties in really well with step 12.
That's what I said.
It?
So we end up, I said we'd end up at step 12. So, because here's the thing. Almost always, I'll be working with a couple, not even just an addictive couple, for example, a couple who's working on something in their relationship, and they just start to figure out how to do things differently. And I say to them, great, I'm glad for you, and just know God's going to bring somebody into your life this week who needs to hear this from you. And often they'll be like, no, Glenn, we're just learning this stuff ourselves. And I think, that's exactly when God brings somebody into your life, when you're just learning something yourself, because that's when you're the best teacher. Because then you don't teach in a one-up, one-down sort of way. You're teaching a, I'm kind of going through this with you.
Shoulder to shoulder.
Right. Yep. And suddenly it's a way, people are way more open to that kind of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important. Sometimes I talk to addictive people and they're like, well, Glenn, I'm still only working on step three myself. I can't help anybody else yet. That's step 12. And I think, no, here's what you need to understand. The instant you master step one, the next week or the week after, somebody in your group is going to be really struggling, acting like they still have control of their life and they're in charge of themselves. And they're going to need you to teach them about what you learned about step one.
That is so true.
The instant you master something, even in the beginning sort of way, then God brings people into your life who need to learn that from you. And so I need to be clear what I want. I need to surround myself with a community of people that help me start creating that life. And then I literally need, almost immediately afterwards, to start looking for people that God brings to me who need to learn the things that I'm learning in that process.
It's too bad we're on live radio because I'd like to think about this for a minute, but
uh-huh.
Because it's so deep. But it is true. I think part of the reason that a lot of people in recovery work with others is to sharpen the saw, as Steve Covey would have said, to... You really don't learn it until you can teach it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about not just knowing it well enough to teach it, but there's that connection there that I don't really have words for. Can you expound on that a little?
Well, what I think is everything, sometimes people come to me and say, well, Glenn, help me know what my purpose is. Help me know what's going to, my calling is, what would give my life meaning. And I think everything that gives us a sense of purpose really consists of two things. I need to know what my gifts are and who I'm supposed to give them to. So, of course, the instant I start learning something, what will give me purpose is going to teach that to somebody else. See, it's knowing something, having a skill, an ability, a knowledge, and sharing that with somebody else. That's what gives my life purpose. And so I just think, so it's part of everybody's life that God will always be taking anybody who's learning something and then bring other people into your life who need to hear that from you. But if you're in an addictive recovery sort of program where you really, really focus on learning and growing, it will be even more true. Now, those same people will be even more resistant to believing it's true because they're coming out of that shame-based place where they think they don't have anything to give to anybody else. And it's really important to remember a huge part of recovery is giving to other people.
And can one of the things we give, is it a gift, your brokenness?
Yes. It's hugely important. In fact, I think the only way that we actually teach anybody anything is to use a process that I call connect and then lead, and it goes like this. Back when my daughter was, I want to say in middle school, she came home from something, and she was really upset. And she told me this thing that had gone really wrong for her at her school that day. And I almost started to tell her what to do. And I could literally hear God's voice screaming in the back of my head to stop. So I stopped. I prayerfully thought about it for a second, and then I said, you know, when I was in your age, something a lot like that happened to me too. And I tried this, and that didn't work. And I tried this other approach, that didn't work. And I tried this, that worked really great. Thanks, Dad, she said. Off she went. I could have just lectured her about what to do. She wouldn't have heard a word I said. You don't understand. Went into her room, slammed the door. Or I could take the moment to actually connect. Let her know I get it. I understand the struggle. Been there myself. Here's what I learned. That is who can teach us anything. That's the only person that can teach us anything.
Well, otherwise, it's like you're too stupid to figure this out. Here,
right.
I'm going to tell you what you need to do. But we do that.
Right.
Even though we care, we
right.
want to, you know, stop the pain. I like that way to
right.
do it.
Right.
What do you call that, connect? And
connect, then lead. CTL, I call it. Connect, then lead. And I think, not to put it too far, but I think this all the time, that Jesus was a perfect example of connect, then lead. Sometimes people say, well, why didn't he start his ministry till he was 30? And I think, connect, then lead.
Mm.
You could come into the world immediately and start telling men and women how to live their life, and everybody would have thought, like, you know, you're an angel. You don't even belong in this life. You don't have any of the struggles or temptations that we have. You don't have to deal with any of the stuff we deal with. Your advice is, like, meaningless.
Mm.
But somebody's actually literally put in the time, spent 30 years really learning, struggling, understanding what is it like to be a human living in this world, and then has some things to teach us. Well, see, that actually has some meaning to us.
CTL, Bill.
CTL.
CTL is right.
We're going to take one more short break. When we come back, more CTL. We're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering tonight on Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for being with us tonight on Real Recovery. George, we have Christmas coming up, as you know. And one of the really neat promotions we're doing here at Faith Radio is Angel Tree, where you bless children through Angel Tree, And $84 actually helps reach six children with a Christmas gift and the gospel and the message of love from that incarcerated parent. And I've been in 80 prisons with Prison Fellowship, so I know the impact it has on the incarcerated person. And it's not just a gift the kid gets, but it's actually a gift that the child requested. And somehow dad or mom who's incarcerated delivers on Christmas, gets this present from mom or dad who's in prison, and it's exactly what they wanted. And it makes a huge difference to the child who's suffering with an incarcerated parent, and also makes a huge difference as we try to reach the people in prison with the gospel.
Yeah, why would you do that for
them? They get overwhelmed with love. They go, okay, who are these people? I must listen to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so that's something to consider. Please consider giving a contribution to Angel Tree. It's a great...
How would we do that?
I think you go to My Faith Radio, or you can call 1-855-59-ANGEL, and that will help you, will assist you in getting your donation to the right place.
That's cool. So,
George, again, we've got Dr. Glenn Pickering with us tonight. He's got a website called tagfreeliving.com. You can go see more about that. We'll put some of this information tonight up on the website, which you can get right off the Real Recovery page. And tonight's title of our message has been Recovery: The Three Real Questions. Question one was, what do I want? Question two is, who is the community that's going to help me get what I want? And the third question is, the community that we're going to return.
To whom do I give back?
To whom do we give back?
Right.
And so that's kind of where we are right now. To whom do we give back? And that's a perfect tie into Angel 3.
Gosh, it is.
Yeah, so that was dumb luck, too. I didn't really plan that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, whatever.
I want to talk a little bit about the last part of this step, guys, where we try to, you know, practice these principles in all our affairs. And we're talking about going back to the first question about what do we want. Well, we talked about getting out of our recovery what we were trying to get out of our addictive behavior.
Right.
And that it's giving us something we want. It took me 7 years to get my first year of sobriety continuous. You go out and then, you know, you get some time and you go, I'm going to celebrate this by using, which is really insane, but that's what we do. But I can't tell people why it's been different other than I've added to it all the time rather than, okay,
right,
I've done this.
Right.
Got to make it better all the time. And,
right,
of course, walking with Christ is like that. Paul wrote that we press on towards the goal.
Right.
But I notice, guys, that when I reach out a little to work with other people, the thing that really is the best thing that's ever happened in my life is getting to share the joy. And, Bill, you know this because we work down at the Salvation Army in Minneapolis, is seeing guys who get it and to see God transforming somebody's life.
Right.
The, you know, the resurrection power of Christ. People say, I don't see that anymore. Hey, work with dying addicts. You will see it all the time.
Right.
That's as good as it gets.
Right.
How can we get that in other areas of our life?
That's a darn good question. This show, and I think I just have so much respect for you guys. I think this show is all about the 12-step. This show is you guys trying to say, hey, we've done so much with our lives. We've learned so much along the way. How do we use that then to give back to other people? How do we make a difference in other people's lives? And I think sometimes people get stuck on thinking that giving back part has to be reciprocal. So let me talk about that for just a second, if that's okay.
Mm, yeah, it'd be great.
A guy once told me, Glenn, what makes community unique is that it's not reciprocal. And so I looked at him like, what? What does that mean? He said, almost all of our other relationships are reciprocal. So I go to the store, I give the clerk money, and they give me the product that I buy. I help this person out, and I kind of expect them to help me back, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if you're in a part of a church community, for example, or any other kind of community, I mean, if I'm sick in the hospital, somebody might come and visit me. If that same person who visited me has a problem with their debt, somebody else at our church is probably going to come out and help them fix that because I don't know how to do that. And if our pastor needs me to preach, then they might call me and ask me to do that. It's like we all give and we all receive, but we probably don't receive from the place we gave, and vice versa. We probably also don't give back to the place we received necessarily. So it's important not to think, okay, here are the people who have helped me. How do we give back to them? That might be a place you give back, but it might not. The question is, what are other doors are God opening right in front of you where you could reach out or care or be there for somebody else? And it can show up in all kinds of ways.
So like when I take Bill out to dinner every week for the last 3 years and haven't gotten anything back, Maybe I'll get it somewhere else.
No, it's a classic non-reciprocal relationship. You give and don't give anything back. No, it's
Now he's mad.
I'm not mad.
I'm thinking Bill has other things that he gives you.
I think I do.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
And this is also non-reciprocal because you guys come here and you give to people who are just listening. And you don't necessarily get stuff back from them. And they can't necessarily give stuff back to you, but they can take all the stuff they learn and give that and touch other people in their lives.
It is cool, though, when somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I heard your show and that really helped. That does something.
Yeah, it does.
Happens about once or twice a year to me, but it's cool. And I get a lot from Bill. We tease each other a lot because I know he's very violent and angry. So I just want to make sure. I get a lot from you when you're on because you think about these things so differently, doesn't he, Bill?
Totally.
Like, what do you mean?
Well, it was a nice compliment. I don't have anything to back it up. No, like the thing I still remember about step 10 we talked about, when you're wrong, that doesn't mean you're bad.
Right.
And what do you really want? Right. CTL was new for me. I think we join people in their brokenness and then lead. I like that.
I love the principles of tonight's talk, too, because it really does apply to everybody.
Right.
You don't have to touch drugs, alcohol, have any kind of addiction whatsoever. You could have fears, anxieties, quirks, and stress, and you could apply all these principles tonight and start evaluating how you feel. What do you want? Who are you going to do it with, and how are you going to give back?
Right, because I think, thank you for saying that. It was actually kind of a thought I was hoping to touch on just for a little bit. Every single Christian, I think, really, really needs to be struggling with these three questions. What do you actually want? Jesus said, you know, basically, what do you want? You're not going to do it by yourself. Fear not, I'll be with you. So it's going to happen in community. So who are the communities around you who can help you with that? And then everything else is about servanthood and about giving back. And it's like, if I get it right, I get what I want, I ask what I want, I get that in community, and I give back, not necessarily in that community, but everywhere else. And there's this then ripple effect that starts going off from each and every one of us.
What would you say, Glenn, if somebody said, well, what I want to do, the barking dog in my life, is I just want to avoid pain?
Right.
What would you say to that person?
I'm sure it's true. It's that it's only half of the answer. So if an alcoholic says, Glenn, I want to quit drinking, it's not that they're wrong. It's just that that's only half of the answer. Uh-huh. And what is it that drinking gives you that you want to find a better way to get? So there's this annoying thing in your life, totally get it. What is it you actually want? And getting rid of that annoying thing, I always think, on a happiness scale of minus 10 to plus 10, getting rid of the things I don't want only gets me to zero.
So you might spend all day waking up at negative 8 and work all day, and you go to bed and you're at zero.
Right.
So you've spent no energy, and you've achieved nothing on the other side of zero.
Right, exactly. And I just think, so when so many people say, well, Glenn, this is what I do to try and be happy, I think, no, this is what you do to try and avoid unhappiness. You're trying to eliminate the things you don't want. But see, even if I eliminated every single thing from my life I didn't want, that will only get me to neutral. Now there's nothing in my life. I mean, it's like that square piece of black dirt. It's okay. It's a fine starting point, but it in itself is not much of a goal. You have to be really, really clear. What do you want? Which is why Jesus pushed that so hard in Matthew 7. Seek and ye shall find. What do you want?
Well, he said it to the blind guy, too.
I know.
What
That's
do you want?
So funny. Before he would heal him.
And obviously, he was a blind guy.
But
see, you don't ask a blind guy, what do you want?
I know, that's what I'm thinking. But see, here's why Matthew 7 is so important. Until you ask, you don't get. You guys were quoting James before. He said basically the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get what you want because you don't ask.
Asking means you have to know what you want, right?
But it's because God will not violate our free will. So until you ask, nothing happens.
So you don't ask a blind guy, what do you want?
Right. Asking can be scary, though, right?
Right.
You're vulnerable then. Like the guy that wants to avoid pain.
Right.
Hey, welcome to life, pal.
Right.
You got to suit up and show up, but you're not going to get any of the good stuff. So you can avoid pain.
Right.
Don't leave your house. Don't get in any relationships. Starting to sound a lot more like me than I wanted it to. But you got to take some risks. You're not going to get the good stuff.
Right. Yes, people get stuck on what I call the big lie. Sometimes when I ask people, some of my clients who I've been working with all these years, to start doing a few things differently, be a little more vulnerable, they basically say, well, Glenn, if I'm more vulnerable, I might get hurt. And even at the very beginning of my counseling practice all those years ago, I knew there was something wrong with that sentence, but I didn't know what. So I would say things like, oh, no, I'm sure you won't, but that's not right. See, the part they say is not the part that's the lie. It's the part that goes left unsaid that's the lie. And when you think about it, Glenn, if I'm vulnerable, I might get hurt. see, that sentence is actually true. But think about the rest of the sentence that goes left unsaid. And if I'm invulnerable, then I won't
get happy.
But you, but being invulnerable will not keep you from getting hurt. It keeps you lonely, isolated, and totally set up for your next addictive episode. So what I say is, here's your two options. If you're vulnerable, you might get hurt. If you're invulnerable, you get hurt for sure. Those are actually your two choices.
And I would guess that if they're sitting in your office, they are hurt.
Right, exactly.
Hurt already exists.
Right, so to say, if I'm invulnerable, I won't, I think, no, that's bad thinking. Look at your life. It's not true.
Well, George, that wraps up our hour. It flies
by, doesn't
it? We've
got to have him back.
Well, we try to have him back often because he's one of our most favorite guests that we have.
Excluding all those people
who
won't come on your show.
Our most favoritist guy.
Most favoritist guy. Say, thanks for listening tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show. You can pass it on to your friends on MyFaithRadio.com. Go to Real Recovery. Check out other podcasts as well. And thanks for being with us tonight. We're very glad you joined us. Good night and God bless.